to discard your mental blinders. Counterthink with Mike Adams is now live on InfoWars.com.
In today's episode of Counterthink here at InfoWars.com, we're talking with Dr. Suzanne Humphries, who joins us in studio on a very kind of a frightening topic. She was subjected to serious death threats by some pro-vaccine people who want to murder those who are skeptical about the vaccine science propaganda that's being pushed on us all. Dr. Suzanne Humphries does very few interviews, but we interviewed her on a previous segment. She was such a great guest. I invited her back in to talk to us today about the death threats against her. But it goes even deeper than that. It involves the FBI. It involves the Austin police. And we'll find out more details about that as this show progresses. Dr. Humphries, thank you for the courage that you have in joining us in studio today to talk about these.
Thank you. And just to be clear, I don't know if this was someone pro-vaccine, okay? Because there's no way we can tell from these letters. We have to assume that given who I am and what I do, that it could be, that it's very likely that it could be. But there's no evidence in these letters that this is somebody that is pro-vaccine.
Oh, okay. Good point. I know it's very important to keep this fact-based. You were death-threatened.
I was.
They wanted to kill you in a very graphic way that they described in the letters. They talked about the Desert Eagle pistol. They talked about doing a mass shooting in a crowd, seeing you bleeding out on the ground and all of these things. But as you said, they didn't say in their letter that they think everybody should be vaccinated.
Absolutely.
But the what you are known for is questioning the vaccine mandates and well, you're known as a scientist and a doctor who simply wants to help people avoid risks associated with medical interventions. Is that a fair statement?
It is. And what's interesting is that this was an attack against the Autism Trust, but it was mainly an attack against me. So that's what makes it so confusing, is that I was the person that was addressed, whereas Polly Tommy and Jonathan Tommy both have emails that someone could have addressed them. But they chose me, where I'm kind of a guest at the Autism Trust. So that was what was kind of weird about it, which makes you think it has to do more with vaccines than autism.
Okay, so you're involved in this autism organization. What do you do with that group, if I may ask?
I don't really do anything. I am currently residing near the Autism Trust, and I worked with Polly Tommy all of last year when we were traveling, collecting stories throughout the country, throughout the UK and Australia about the vaccine injury, personal stories from families. So I worked with Polly during that time. I have nothing to do with the movie, but I worked with her on those stories.
I see. And the death threats against you included, I believe, references to you speaking in public, which would concern your vaccine.
Absolutely.
And medical.
So talks. They wanted me to be afraid pretty much everywhere I went. It was a real psychological thriller, okay? So they mentioned that they would like to just pluck me off the street and take me somewhere quiet and torture me to death over a very long period of time. But they just decided that that was too tough to pull off. So the second choice would be to blast me away in front of an audience where I'm speaking, to come from behind. And they basically spelled it out in graphic terms. And then the third choice, which this individual settled upon, was to blow the door down at the Autism Trust while we're live and shoot me several times while I'm bleeding out and dying on the ground, and then finish me off on camera.
Whoa.
And that they would blow away everybody at the Autism Trust.
So a mass murder event is what they were describing.
That is what was described.
And they wanted to kill you among other speakers and other participants in this event. Now, I believe the letter also said that they would not kill you if you stopped talking about the things you talk about.
No, there was nothing about that. There was no out here. It was only, I'm coming to effing kill you. And the F-bomb was dropped upwards of 50 times in between all of the letters and all the graphic ways how they were coming to get me, and to know that they are coming and that they would be here in a couple of months. It wasn't going to happen right away. So they wanted me to suffer for a while.
I see.
Be worried everywhere I went, and that they would strike out after a period of time after they got some of their own issues in order. They were coming to get me.
Okay, I'm glad you're clarifying this. This is why we're having you in studio to answer these questions. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this break to get into more details about this gruesome, horrific threat against you it's counterthink.com. Stay with us.
Exposing the corporate media assault on your reality. It's Counterthink with Mike Adams.
You are watching Counterthink. I'm your host, Mike Adams, and today's guest is Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, who was subjected to horrific death threats because of her outspoken words questioning the vaccine science establishment. Dr. Humphreys, of course, is the author of Dissolving Illusions and another book, Rising from the Dead. Rising from the Dead, an autobiography. And her website is drsuzanne.net, correct?
Correct.
Now, in the last segment, you described some of the very specific death threats, the mass shooting threats against you, the way that they wanted to kill you, the very gruesome details of this death threat. Now, but I got to ask you, why are you choosing to go public with this? Why are you here? Why'd you agree to be here?
Okay. You probably noticed that I haven't said very much publicly, but initially, I think it was the second or third night after the first letter came, Polly and I decided to go public because we didn't feel that we were getting any help where we were. We made the report to the local Austin police. We made a report to the FBI, and there was no response as of the time that we went public. And we felt we were very frightened at that point. And we felt that the best protection for ourselves was to go public and to ask for prayers that night. And we got that, and we got overwhelming support. And so I felt that when you asked me to come back, I said no initially. And then I decided later that it was a good idea because I felt that I owed the public that I leaned on and asked for support in the beginning and told my story and essentially probably did protect me in the long run. And I felt that it was a good idea to come back and just tell them the rest of the story.
And the rest of the story is what you're going to reveal some things here that you've never mentioned publicly before, I understand.
No, I mean, I don't go running around screaming about this. I don't feel there's any utility in talking about it. In fact, I feel slightly not frightened, but I do feel like that there could be problems as a result of you and I talking about this publicly, just because it turned out to be so crazy. You know, what happened was so not what I expected.
Well, I've said this to you privately as well. Excuse me. I think the biggest protection is to go public and have full transparency and let the world know exactly what's happening. So, you know, anybody's threatening you, they are going to be investigated. They're going to be exposed. And we have a powerful platform here at InfoWars and Counterthink and my website, Natural News, and so on. And, you know, we care about people like you, especially who are working to save lives and protect individuals. The fact that you are being death threatened in a very gruesome way is absolutely unacceptable. But it's consistent with the pro-vaccine psychos out there. Some of them are crazy. Some of them are mentally ill. They talk this way all the time. They love murdering people. I mean, this is the way they talk. You've seen some of that on the internet.
Well, you know, one of the reasons why it's believable that it could be somebody who's against someone who speaks about what they consider the truth about vaccines not being 100% wonderful is because it does happen. It's because, you know, on both sides, it's not just the pro-vaccine. I've seen people on the anti-vaccine or the vaccine truth or whatever you want to call it say very aggressive things about Paul Offit. And so it happens on both sides. It just so happened that, as far as I'm aware, none of them have gone public with anything happening to them like happened to me. And not getting a response initially from the legal parties involved. And so it does.
But your situation, though, took a twist that I've never heard of before, and I'd like to get into that with you here. So you reported it to the Austin police, and you reported it to the FBI, correct? Very quickly.
So I have a full timeline here because I don't like to forget, but on January 18th, we received the first threat. January 19th made the in-person police department report, and then was told I had to call a phone number instead. So I called the phone number, made the report, as was told I would hear back from a detective, and I never did. The same day, I made an FBI report. You can't call, you can't go somewhere, you have to do it all online. And we didn't get any response. And then we got another email on the 23rd, which was even worse than the first one.
Person who threatened you.
Absolutely. And there was somebody with a drone in our backyard. The drone came into the backyard the following day after the first one. And that's why we decided to go public as well, because all these weird things were happening. So there were two emails, the second one worse than the first. And then the FBI came to visit on the, I believe it was the 25th.
Okay, so the FBI took interest. Now that's interesting. We published our story on the 24th.
Right.
And we went big with the threats against you on National News. And then the FBI visited you the next day, 25th.
Yeah, I believe it was the 25th or the 26th. Nope. Yeah, 26th, sorry, the 26th. I got a third email on the 25th. The FBI visited on the 26th, and the local police did finally respond after the second email threat. I called the police. I said, please come to the house after the second one. And two young men came to the house, and they did report it. And then the detective finally got in touch with me.
Now, as all this was happening, didn't you also tell me before in another interview that your car...
That was many years ago, though.
Oh, that's not related
that
to this event?
That was up in Maine, right.
Okay, because there are many, many deaths of holistic health doctors and natural health practitioners across America that's been documented. That's why people are very, very concerned when these death threats are directed at you.
I mean, certainly we don't have information either way on a lot of these people. And I do think that it's possible that there was foul play involved with several of the people that, I mean, Dr. Bradstreet, come on.
Right.
There's no way that he shot himself in the chest and then fell into the river. I really don't believe that.
Yeah.
But that's the spin. You have Dr. Timothy right there.
Cunningham from the CDC. Yeah,
again, he was found in the river. It's another weird, mysterious doctor death. And so people are starting to say, you know, this is foul play. Something's going wrong here. And I've had aggressive things happen to me as a result of just innocently stating the facts about medical science and vaccines as I see them from the medical literature and
right.
my medical training.
Well, it's because you're credible. That's the issue. You know what you're talking about. You have the data to back yourself up. You speak with knowledge and credibility. That's why you're a threat to the system, I believe. But let's go ahead. What happened? What did the FBI do next?
Well, they came to visit and, you know, they did a very thorough job. They looked through the house. They met both of the autistic men and everyone that lived in the house. And they took me to another room. And I guess they wanted to just really look in my eyes, you know, like a good Larry David, you know. And
right.
and so they did. And they took the report and they left.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to California and did a lecture in an opera theater with some 2,000 people.
So you didn't let the threat stop you from speaking publicly?
No, but there was a very heavy security detail on me and on the people coming in.
I was a little bit concerned for you on that trip, by the way.
Yeah, I was very well looked after.
Okay.
No one was going to kill me during that trip. I can guarantee that.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Then what transpired next? Because there's some weird twists and turns to this whole thing.
Okay. So initially, everybody in the authoritative position said, this isn't real. Look, if somebody was going to kill you, they would have just killed you. And that's probably true. I think that if somebody wanted to kill me, they would have just killed me. But if somebody wanted me to shut up or to scare the heck out of me, this was a brilliant way to do it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And whoever did this was very cyber savvy. And I don't want to go into detail because I don't want to give anybody ideas, but just know that they're very cyber savvy in hiding themselves and in coding things certain ways.
So they couldn't, their IP address couldn't be tracked. Their originating point couldn't be tracked at all.
No, none of that.
And the FBI tried to track them?
That I don't know.
Okay. Well, you would hope that they would.
They're
try.
Telling me very little, I should say.
Okay.
So they came to the house, and the thing that I've never talked about is that there was a third email. So I got the first email, very hateful. I'm going to kill you. Very horrible, profane language. I think you put that email up. The second email was even worse, and it was so angry and hateful. It's even if you watch a lot of scary movies, I would think it would be hard to come up with the things that this person came up with. And then
right.
the photograph that was sent to me, which I'll leave a copy of you. There was a video sent that I didn't actually look at, but other people looked at for me and said, don't watch it because it
wow.
was blowing a whole family
but
away.
What was
shotgun.
What was in the third email? We've only got 40 seconds left.
Third email was an apology letter from the person that wrote the first two emails saying that they were autistic and that
they were autistic.
Yes.
And you've never released this publicly before.
No, because first of all, we don't believe that it's that that's really what's happening. Until I meet this person, I don't believe this is somebody with autism that's really, truly sorry.
All right. So we're going to go to a quick break here. Dr. Humphreys, stay with us. We'll be right back after this break with more details about this third letter, this apology letter, and then what happened with the FBI after that. And it will blow your mind. Stay with us here on Counterthink.
Doing what you're told without knowing why is what they want. Counterthink with Mike Adams.
Welcome back to Counterthink. This is Mike Adams, your host. This airs at Infowars.com each Sunday at 6 p.m., as well as the website Counterthink.com. And we're continuing our conversation with Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, who, of course, was subjected to horrific and gruesome graphic death threats from an individual that I believe is obviously pro-vaccine and trying to silence Dr. Humphreys for speaking out against the vaccine establishment. She's just revealed, exclusive for the first time, that there was a third letter sent to her, which was an apology letter from the same person who had threatened her. And in this apology letter, he reveals that, or he claims that he is autistic. And he claims that he doesn't own a gun, and that he didn't mean the things that he said in the previous two letters. And it sounds like someone who's trying to get you to back down because of all the heat that was being brought to this case in January when it first began to unfold. Is that a fair assessment, or is it hard to tell?
The possibilities for this third email are numerous. You know, so we go from two outrageously hateful graphic, one of them with a picture of me with my eyes gouged out and semen sprayed all over the picture on a table. I mean, really, really hateful stuff here. It's not just normal, I hate you, I want you to die of polio. That's the normal hate email that I get. This is unique. It's intended to terrorize to a really, really high degree.
Right.
Everyone I've sent those to cringe, okay?
So unreal.
Then all of a sudden I get this email, this very long apology, very nicely spoken. You know, I'm so sorry. I want you to know that I want to prove, first of all, that it's me. He goes on to prove. No, we know it's a he now from that picture. And that he's taken steps to hide himself. I won't find him. And that he's had a terrible life. He's been tortured and abused. And after he heard me pray, ask for prayers for him, that he all of a sudden changed his mind. And I do believe that this is possible. So I don't want to rule that out as a possibility.
Uh-huh.
But I can also say there's still a likelihood that this is intended to make me relax or to call the FBI off, because it was a day after, actually it was a day before the FBI, but to call off the investigation. I have private investigators still employed looking for this individual. And apologizing, asking me to relax. The email before, it said they weren't coming for a couple of months to come and kill me. Now all of a sudden I'm supposed to relax. And doesn't add up.
It was a please back off letter.
You don't get empathy overnight if you really have autism, okay? You don't all of a sudden get empathy like that.
So you don't think his claim of being autistic holds a lot of credibility?
I mean, Asperger, maybe, because of the high intellect and the ability to, you know, do the things that were done. But as far as real, you know, real serious autism, no, they'd have to be very on the other end of the spectrum if that's the case.
But then, now, here's what else is fascinating. You shared this letter with the FBI.
I shared it with the local police immediately. I shared everything the minute I got it. I've been completely transparent with all authoritative bodies here. So I sent it immediately to the local police and to the shared it with the FBI when they came to the house. And then the following day, the twist is, so I went to California. Then on the 27th, the local police department receives a fax from a service that I'd never heard of anyway. That's a whole other
story. Anonymous
fax service with both of the case ID numbers on there, saying that, oh, I sent this to Dr. Humphreys and I want you people to know that I sent it to her and that I apologize, to make the police be called off as well. So then the FBI calls me on the 7th and says,
wait,
the local police got this fax from the...
Okay, back up a second, because this is a really critical fact. That fax that was sent to the Austin PD contained the case number.
That's right.
Of the, when you had filed with the Austin PD, you filed a criminal complaint or a complaint,
mm-hmm.
They assigned a case number to it.
That's right.
What is important for the audience to know about case numbers?
Well, Okay. Initially, I didn't even know I had a case number. I was given a number which wasn't actually the case number. So the detective called me and left a message on my voicemail, my answering machine, saying that I had the numbers wrong. Here are the actual numbers. And this was, I believe, on the 25th that I received that phone call specifying what the case numbers were. So the only person that had those case numbers was me. I had them in my phone. I didn't even write them down anywhere. They were in my phone.
So then
it looks like someone from our house has sent, or I have sent this, or it was the perpetrator. But then how would that perpetrator have gotten the case numbers? The FBI said to me, it's not possible. The local police said it's not possible that someone on the outside could have gotten those case numbers. So it had to be me, or it had to be someone in my household that got them.
So the FBI told you this had to be coming from your household because no one else can get the case numbers.
That's right. And I said, well, if that's your theory, then the only possibility is that it's me, because I didn't even write them down or give them to anyone. I took them to California in my phone with me. Nobody had them.
Are you sure your FBI agent wasn't named James Comey or something like that? I mean, this is starting to get really
funny you say that, because I mentioned the possibility of my phone being hacked or of the message being heard somehow. And the FBI agent was none too happy and said that I wasn't important enough for something like that to happen, and that if I continued on that path, he was going to hang up the phone on me. And he wanted to keep and stick with that it's someone inside the house. So I thought, okay, I'm going to cooperate here. We'll investigate everyone in the house. I invited them over with a polygraph and to look at everything.
So now the FBI is turning this back on you.
That's the twist I never expected.
You had to be the one, or someone close to you had to be the one to do this, threatening yourself. So
yes,
let me take this to the next level.
Yes.
Because this is where my organization got involved. I assigned this story to one of my reporters, whose name I won't mention, but we have this all on record, on email, with the headers and the IP address and everything. I had my reporter contact the Austin Police Department and request the case number. And my reporter was given the case number for this case. In an email, and I confirmed it with you that that's the case number, even though I had no knowledge beforehand.
That's right.
So I
was told it was an unhackable system, that nobody on the outside could have possibly gotten it anyway, including calling.
And yet all we did, I had a reporter just ask for it, and we were given the case number by the Austin PD, I think it was a public relations officer. We have his name. We have the badge number. We have everything. They gave it to us. And so that means the FBI either did not know that that's possible or was lying to you.
Yeah, I really don't know. I was so shocked. So I get this phone call on the 7th when I get back from the FBI. And he tells me about this. And I said, well, what do you think that's, what's all that all about? And he said, someone was setting me up. And I said, or he said, someone's trying to help you on the inside. And I was truly baffled. I said, that's what I said. I said, how would it help me to send these threats to me? How would that help me? And he said, to either stop me or to screw with me or to legitimize me, were the three possibilities of why I would ask somebody to do this to me, or why somebody in my inner circle would do this to me.
You know, it's extraordinary, but what we know for sure is that the FBI was either lying to you or incompetent. They did not know that anybody can call the Austin PD and get these case numbers, because that's exactly what we did. I mean, that blows their whole story.
I called the detective from the Austin police after you got the number. And I said, is it possible that somebody could have called, that the reporter could have called, that anybody could have called on the phone or emailed and contacted the police department and gotten these numbers? And he said, I'll go check. And he came back and he said, no, it's not possible. It's definitely not possible.
Okay, we're going to take a break. There's one more amazing twist to this, and we'll cover it when we come back. You're watching Counterthink with Mike Adams and Dr. Suzanne Humphreys.
Countering the brain-dead propaganda of the status quo, this is Counterthink with Mike Adams, right here on InfoWars.
You know, it's extraordinary, the story, the investigation that is unfolding here in the presence of Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, who's revealing exclusive information that she's never made public before. She's sharing it with us here at Counterthink at InfoWars.com. This is shocking. It's stunning information, how you were death threatened and you went to the Austin police and you went to the FBI and you tried to help them find the perpetrator of this, of whoever was sending you these very vicious, vile death threats. And they turned it around on you and seemed to imply that it was you doing this to yourself. And then I got my reporter involved, and my reporter was able to call the Austin PD or email them and get the case number that they said no one could get. And that was their proof that it was you. And then we were able to get the case number, and just blowing a hole in their whole story. And it seems like they don't have any interest in catching the actual people who are doing this to you. Like, their whole job is to catch bad people. They're not interested in the bad person. They're interested in blaming you.
I think this story just isn't big enough. They like bank robberies and things like that. And you know what they kept asking me, and what the local police kept asking me, is, am I going to press charges? And I should have just said, absolutely yes. But the truth is, it would depend on who it was. That's whether I would press charges or not. This was really what this person says. No, I wouldn't press charges. But if it was an aggressive, you know, person otherwise, I would. But because it's not, you know, a big sexy romantic story, we never got outside of my sphere for an investigation. I wanted to. I said, please come in and investigate us and rule us out so that we can move on and extend our sphere of potential suspects here. Because as it stood, it was just us, two autistic men, one age 22, one age 50, that couldn't have possibly masterminded this in a million years. We're the top suspects.
The mastermind's there. Well, but it seems to me, you know, the FBI has lost a tremendous amount of credibility lately. And even though there are a lot of well-meaning agents, you know, mm-hmm. on the front lines of the FBI, they're catching actual bad people. They're catching, you know, fraudsters and, you know, financial scams and kidnappers and all those kinds of people. And, you know, so the FBI is not all bad, but under James Comey, you know, and the whole Robert Mueller special prosecutor, the whole deep state thing that's happening on the political spectrum, a lot of people are questioning the FBI. And I got to say that this experience of dealing with the FBI in your case doesn't give me a lot of confidence that they're interested in catching bad guys.
Well, I don't think they're interested in catching this one, because they're convinced that it came from the inside, and because I'm still alive and they don't think it was a really true threat to my life.
So. If they had managed to harm you or kill you, then there would be an investigation.
One of the men in the house got severely beaten up, and we called in the local police, and it's been crickets. It's like I think they're so overwhelmed. The local police said this happens all the time. People are getting beat up. Horrible things are happening. I think it's another. It's just like doctors are overworked and lack enthusiasm. The same thing's going on with the FBI.
What do you mean the guy got beat up? What are you talking about?
Polly's son was beat up at the South by Southwest Music Fair. And he was nearly killed, actually. This was about a month after this happened. And the local police were angry that they had to come out to the house. And they said, this is nothing. This is a blip on our radar. We're just way too busy for this.
Wow. Well, there's another wrinkle to this that I'm going to share with you here that may help explain this. So as I mentioned in the last segment, it was my reporter who contacted the Austin PD and requested the case number and was given the case number. But what I didn't say in that segment, but I'm revealing here, is that my reporter contacted them legitimately in the name of a website that I published called science.news. So my reporter explained that he's writing for science.news, okay, and he wanted the case number involving Dr. Suzanne Humphreys and this whole death threat thing. I believe, now this is my theory, this is not you saying this, I believe that the police and the FBI wanted to cooperate with science.news because they thought that was going to be opposed to you, that science.news would be pro-vaccine. And they thought we were going to write an article harassing you or attacking you, and that, in my opinion, is why they cooperated with us and gave us the case number, because they have a political agenda, I believe. If we had contacted them from naturalnews.com or InfoWars, for that matter, they would not have given us the case number. That's my belief.
Could be.
Can't prove it.
But you're also assuming that anyone's thinking. You said they were thinking XYZ. I get the sense that nobody's thinking at all. The detective sounded so tired, and so it was like,
Well, they are overworked.
Couldn't be bothered. Absolutely. I think they're absolutely overworked. And this just isn't interesting. And he knew that I might not want to press charges. But I think you're probably right that if anyone had this the good sense to, but wouldn't they want to look it up and see what's happening there? If they really cared, they should have.
Yeah.
Nobody's even following through on anything.
But then what does this say about our whole system or the safety of individuals like you? If your theory is correct, then we have a wildly incompetent law enforcement system in Austin and perhaps at certain levels of the FBI.
Overwhelmed, I should say. I'm not saying incompetent because I'm sure they're able to do what needs to be done.
We can call it overwhelmed to the point of incompetence.
Okay.
Right? that makes sense.
Yeah.
But then when people like you are getting death threatened with very graphic death threats, and somehow this person who death threatened you was able to get the case number, which shows a level of sophistication that they had to probably impersonate a journalist and contact the Austin PD to get the case numbers. Or they were working inside, or they had a contact inside the Austin PD or inside the FBI. You see where this is going?
Another reason I'd really like to meet this person.
Yeah, well, bring your Glock.
So we can, the bottom line is that, I know now if this were to happen again, I would file the report with the Austin police. I would file the report with the FBI, but I wouldn't rely on them to do anything. I hired my own private detectives. I have my own security detail. I'm not relying on anybody else to look after me ever again.
Good for you. See, that's the thing, the establishment wants to take away your right to defend yourself. They want to take away our firearms, our handguns. And I know you didn't come here to talk about guns per se, but in a system where the police can't protect you, what choice do we have? Look at Broward County. Those sheriff's deputies were ordered to stand down while the kids were bleeding out in the school in Parkland. Why can't citizens defend themselves? Look at what law enforcement did to you.
Well, right now we can. And that's really good. And we need to protect that. It's just the same as all the other laws that we need to cherish and understand and protect. That's one of them.
So what has this done for you in terms of, do you feel more courage now to speak out? Do you feel it's more important to speak out? How has this changed you as an outspoken whistleblower, so to speak, in the realm of medicine and science?
Well, I've never pulled any punches. I've been very, very outspoken from the beginning. And if it's changed me at all, what it's really done, it's done me a favor in a certain sense. I wouldn't wish it on anyone, but we can always turn things into good. And it's made me really evaluate my life, what I'm doing, the time that I have left felt very, very precious on those first couple of nights. I thought this could be my last few hours to live. And I felt saddest that I didn't know God better. And it's been now my mission to really know God, walk with God, and therefore, I will continue doing what God wants me to do, and I will not walk in fear. I will never walk in fear, and I will always be protected both spiritually and physically.
I really feel that from you as you're saying that, and that being here in your presence, there's a personal strength that just radiates from you in your decisions and in your courage and in your desire to be a woman of strength and truth and to not be turn into a coward by these vicious people, or even the lies and or the incompetence or whatever's happening inside the FBI and the police, whatever. They're not helping you, but you have God on your side, and you've made that part of your mission, sounds like.
I mean, it's always been part of my mission, but what's really happened now is just more conviction to really ground myself in my faith, because look, running scared only makes you a better prey, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And so I've got to continue with the work that I feel is right for me with whatever time I have left, whether it's 3 days or 3 decades. I really don't know, but every day is going to count now.
Well, thank you for joining us here today, Dr. Humphreys. It's been a pleasure to have you in studio, and I bless you and your work and your courage.
Thank you.
Thank you for speaking out. We'll be right back. This is Counterthink on InfoWars. We'll be right back after this break with the final segment. Stay with us.
Prepare to discard your mental blinders. Counterthink with Mike Adams is now live on InfoWars.com.
So many questions come to mind in the aftermath of this interview with Dr. Suzanne Humphreys and what she revealed here You know, first of all, you're never going to hear this in the legacy media. So InfoWars, Counterthink, this kind of independent media, this is so critical for our society because of these reports, like what you just saw here today, this interview. Dr. Suzanne Humphreys is sitting right here, had the courage to go public and speak out, even perhaps being concerned about what the FBI would do or say or what the Austin police would do. She was being death threatened by some obviously deranged individual. She went to law enforcement for help, and they turned against her, and they implied or blamed her for this vicious series of death threats that was highly, highly disturbing. You know, I happen to know she lost a lot of sleep over this. She was stressed out. You talk about immune suppression. You know, this is how it happens to people. These kinds of threats are very, damaging to human health. And yet even the authorities refused to help her and even sort of criminalized her, or at least implied so. And if it wasn't for independent media, in this case, my organization was able to expose the lies of the FBI and the lies of the Austin police. If we hadn't been able to do that, then she could have been, you know, eventually indicted or something. I mean, we've seen the FBI out of control in America. We've seen Robert Mueller out of control. We've seen the morning raids on Paul Manafort and other close Trump associates who have been targeted with really the weaponization of government against individuals who are selected because they're political targets. And here we have Dr. Humphreys, who's speaking out against a very powerful, very wealthy industry, the for-profit vaccine industry, which is steeped in lies and steeped in fraudulent science. And we began to see the weaponization of government turned against her, even though she was the one who was victimized here. She was the one who was threatened. She was the one who was sent these horrific photos and videos that were just absolutely just vile. You know, it's unreal, but it tells you something very important. And that's why this show exists, because you and I and all of us in this society, we have to take care of ourselves and each other. You can't depend on the police to protect you. And there are many police that do a good job and they have good intentions and so on. But as this case proves, you can't count on those police to be able to help you in your time of need. And you certainly can't count on the FBI being able to help you. You can't count on the federal government being able to help you. You have to take steps to protect and defend yourself. You have to support, I believe, the independent media, because we are the real journalists who are uncovering these true stories. We're the ones doing the deep research. We're not just reprinting press releases like what the so-called mainstream media does. You know, CNN just gets leaks from Brennan or Clapper or deep state agents, and CNN just reprints those press releases or leaks and basically wins Pulitzer Prizes for doing nothing. And the real journalism is taking place right here. Counterthink on InfoWars. Alex Jones and Owen Schroyer, David Knight, myself and many others were the ones doing the real journalism. And many, many people in this country. I'm not saying it's just us. Obviously, it's a lot of people. But this is the journalism that counts. This is the journalism that saves lives, that presents the truth. This is the journalism that helps protect people from being wrongfully accused, which could have happened in this case with Dr. Suzanne Humphreys. I am glad that she decided to go public here on Counterthink. And I encourage you to share this episode everywhere. I know it's not sort of the normal format. It's very, very low-key interview. But this story needs to be told. And I have the name of the sergeant in the Austin PD who gave us that case number. I have his name. I have his email. I have the email headers. I can prove it. There's no question that they gave us that case number. So there goes the entire FBI story. Now, related to this, we do have the death of Timothy Cunningham, this other CDC researcher who was found floating in a river near Atlanta. Of course, the CDC is headquartered in Atlanta, and Timothy Cunningham was working on, I believe, epidemiology. which involves, of course, vaccine and immunology and large population studies and so on. Vaccine statistics or infectious disease statistics, you might say. That's really what epidemiology is all about. He's African American. We know that the EPA, I'm sorry, the CDC whistleblower went public with the truth about how he conspired with other CDC scientists to cover up links between autism and vaccines in young African American males. And so if you think about it, you know, black folks have really more motivation than anybody else to expose the truth about vaccines, because vaccines are predominantly harming young black children more than any other race. And that's because of some genetic differences in human physiology and so on, and inability to clear out certain toxins, the inflammatory adjuvants, the mercury, the aluminum, and all the other ingredients used in vaccines. So Timothy Cunningham was found dead. And he was missing for several weeks, and somebody tried to cover up his death. This was not just a normal death. It's not just somebody wandered off into the wilderness and died and was found later. This was it looks like a deliberate death. Someone had him murdered and tried to cover it up so that it would not be discovered. And I got to ask the question, what is a CDC researcher discovering that someone else thinks it's worth murdering him and covering up that murder in order to conceal it? In fact, here's a whole series of questions. And by the way, go to my website, cdc.news, if you want to see more of this. It's an extraordinary collection of reports about CDC fraud, corruption, and criminal activities. There are international fugitives from justice who worked with the CDC. Excuse me. The CDC is a very evil, very insidious corporation. There's a Freudian slip. It's actually a military branch, but it functions like a corporation because it supports the profits of the vaccine industry. But here are some questions that you need to ask as we close out this episode of Counterthink. Why are so many vaccine-related scientists being either censored or killed? Why are holistic doctors being murdered across America? Why was the FBI and the Austin Police Department trying to turn this case of Dr. Suzanne Humphreys being threatened? They were trying to turn it against her, to blame her. Why did the Austin Police Department lie to her and then turn over the case number to us, to my reporter for science.news? Why did the FBI lie to Dr. Suzanne Humphreys and tell her that no one could have possibly obtained this case number? Why is there vaccine propaganda in Netflix shows and movies and stand-up comedians? Why does the CDC use taxpayer money to place pro-vaccine propaganda across pop culture? Did you know that? It's true. It's actually going on. Why is questioning vaccines the thing that gets you in more trouble than almost anything else in America today? I'm telling you, questioning vaccines gets you slandered, attacked, defamed, deplatformed like nothing else. Just ask Robert F. Kennedy Jr. of the World Mercury Project. He said, I'm paraphrasing, this is his quote, he said he never encountered anything that could destroy your reputation as quickly as questioning the existing vaccine science. We're onto something here. And that's what this show Counterthink is all about. We are beginning to uncover and unpeel the layers of a medical conspiracy that runs so deep throughout this society to the highest levels of government, and yet reaching down to the youngest infants who are being born in our society today. This is a conspiracy. It's a medical conspiracy. It is almost like a vaccine holocaust, I've called it. Children are being killed, murdered, maimed. Doctors are being threatened, silenced. Some are being murdered. Dead bodies are being found in rivers of researchers who worked for the CDC. And yet we are told that we shouldn't ask any questions, that we should all just shut up and sit down and do what we're told and take our vaccine shots and not question the ingredients that are in those vaccines. Well, I say enough is enough. I say no. I will not sit by and say nothing. I will not sit by and do nothing while people are being murdered, while children are being harmed, while science is being destroyed, while the CDC is running this rampant conspiracy of criminal medicine across our society. And I am here today, Mike Adams, for Counterthink on Infowars.com to tell you that I will be here every week to bring you more truth on more issues that matter to our world and to your life in a very personal and powerful way. And that's what this show is all about. Spread the word. Counterthink.com is where you can view the episodes, and Infowars.com every Sunday at 6 p.m. Central. This is Mike Adams signing off for today. Take care.